Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
One of those three men started praying for us, and he prayed that we would be safe, that we would be warm that night. I had no idea when I got into that truck, you know, that one of the guys was going to be talking to Jesus on my behalf.
Everybody has a story, and every one is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
It has many characters.
And so you and I are
a part of it.
We are not.
You're not
the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. An experience one winter night radically changed Melanie Jackson's heart for the homeless. She felt compelled to do something for the most vulnerable people living on the streets. But she knew nothing about homelessness. She had no financial backing, just a sense that God was calling her to do something. And to trust that he would provide more than enough. This is chapter 23 of Epic, Melanie Jackson's story. Tell me about the night you were on the streets in, I think it was December.
I went out with a group. It's called the Canteen Run, and it's a mobile truck that goes out and takes resources to folks right on the street. And it was a really, really nasty night. It was snowing and blowing, and just thinking about folks who were sleeping outside that night, it was kind of tough to wrap my mind around. We went to an area near the university campus, and three men came up to the truck. It looked like they had been having a pretty rough way about it, just the clothes. And one of the guys, I noticed that he didn't have any gloves on, and I saw his fingertips were starting to get dark. Here I am, affluent university community, and it just shouldn't be happening. It was a disconnect. So we kept talking to the guys, got them some coats and blankets. They said they were going to be sleeping in an underground parking garage.
Wow.
So they would be sleeping on concrete in the very cold night. And one of the volunteers from the truck that kind of knew the guys, this was my first time, but the other folks working with the ministry already kind of had relationship with them. And they said, could we pray for you before you go? We all got out of the truck and the volunteers started praying for them. We circled up hands. And the volunteer prayed a simple prayer that they would be safe that night, that God would take care of them until morning. The volunteer finished praying, said amen, and one of those three men started praying for us. And he prayed that we would be safe, that we would be warm that night, and that really... I had no idea when I got into that truck, you know, that one of the guys was going to be talking to Jesus on my behalf.
That was a game changer for you,
I'm guessing. It was.
Had you ever had an experience like that before?
Only one in my life. Hasn't happened since then.
So what started going through your mind?
Well, I wanted to right away find out about more about resources in the community that help folks who have no place to live, because this topic was completely new to me. And over the next few weeks, finding out what was here, what wasn't, where's the gap? Why are these men here and not in the shelter or in the transitional program? What are the answers to these questions? And I had just read a book by David Platt called Radical, Taking Back Your Faith from the American Dream. And in that book, he challenges you to do 5 different things for 1 year, basically to take the radical challenge to live a life of intentional sacrifice rather than the same kind of American dream that so many Christians in our country tend to fall into, you know, the bigger house, the boat, the fence, the cat, the dog, you know. That's not what we see in Scripture. So the book Radical really had a big influence on me, because I tried to do those 5 things for the next year. So I say that Radical was kind of the kick in the tail to do something about what God did in my heart that night.
What did you do?
There was an email that was sent to the group through the Canteen Run about a national movement to help folks just like those three men I had met. They termed them the most vulnerable. homeless. And it was actually a medical measurement tool that was used to evaluate life expectancy.
And what is life expectancy?
Well, most folks don't live to be 60 on the street. And so found out about that movement and started to see what it would be to start a chapter of that movement in this community, in this university community. I knew probably by the middle of January that God was calling me to do something, to sink my life into this purpose. A little bit later in the spring, realizing that it was going to take time and money to get something new started, neither of which I really had a lot of. I was working several different part-time jobs, and I realized I had a couple things that were worth money. I had a small SUV and a motorcycle. So it just made sense to me to sell those items to get a little bit of seed money to start this new effort for the most vulnerable folks who don't have a place to live.
Would you have done that even 10 years before?
I don't think there's any way I would have done that. I think God was doing a work in my heart to prepare me to let go of some stuff, because I grew up in the Midwest, and just that need to care for myself, the work ethic. I've got a tenacious work ethic, and kind of along with that is provision, is making sure that I take care of myself. So to have open hands, willing to let go of what little I had that was worth money, definitely God's work in my heart. And I can honestly say I didn't struggle with it at all. It was just like, this is obvious. This is where money's going to come from.
You sold them, I guess?
Sold them, got asking price for both of them, got a few thousand dollars.
So you took that money and did what?
Well, I held on to it for a while to see exactly what was going to be needed with this movement. The way they identified the most vulnerable was through this written survey. And the way to implement it was to do a wide-scale survey week to try to find folks.
Find the homeless people in your community.
Yep. And one of the things was to have a simple gift card, like a McDonald's, a Steak and Shake, $5 gift card, to give the folks for their time. So that was going to take some money, because there'd probably be a few hundred people. So some of the money went for that, for other parts of starting up a new ministry. And the money was plenty to get us through the first year, actually.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, the housing piece, that's another part of this. So the reason I didn't have to spend a lot of the money for my own personal provision was because I was renting this room from a friend in my church, and her family was going to be moving back that summer. And I had a couple of friends who came to me just a few days apart and said, "Have you been to Restoration yet?" To talk with Irvin, the director, who leads a ministry that helps folks transition off the street. And I thought, yeah, why don't I go talk to him? It's an old hotel with 72 rooms and helping folks transition back into a work environment, to school, helping coaching with parenting. And I had the meeting with the director, and he said that over the years, a few different people had come to live there intentionally. And he said, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And you're welcome to move in and see how it goes.
So you were going to live in one of the rooms in the hotel along with other people who are transitioning out of homelessness.
Yep. So I moved in that summer, and boy, did I learn a lot. God had a lot to teach me, a lot of humbling me and just education.
How long were you there?
I lived there for a year and a half. And one thing I found out, I sold the SUV and the motorcycle, and I bought a cheap car, $1,500 car. And I found out pretty quickly that having a car with tags was a very valuable resource, because a lot of folks didn't have transportation. So the ability to just to give rides, you know, across town and to appointments was a great connection point. I had a dear sister who lived there with her two kids, and she was a powerful prayer partner for me. And she had this vision of the ministry as a little seed in the ground, and God's going to water it, and it's going to grow, and it's going to be a mighty plant. That was just very faith-giving to me. I really needed that.
in that 18 months, so the ministry to the most vulnerable homeless is called See You at Home, right? Mm-hmm. Did it begin to take shape, and what did that look like?
It did. By the end of May, another ministry in town gave us a small space in their attic for an office, a phone number. They gave us a phone number, gave us a computer to use. And so it was just kind of a baby in its infancy that spring.
So you ended up doing the survey. What did you learn from the survey of the most vulnerable?
Well, we interviewed about 350 people and found 16 people who fit into the category of most vulnerable homeless. And of those 16, there were two who said, no thanks, I don't want help with housing. So we had 14 people who said, yes, please help me. Then the graded scale from 1 to 5 of who was in the most serious situation. And, you know, really put out word praying and asking God to provide a place for someone to stay. I didn't have an apartment or a house to help people get into, transition off the streets, and I didn't have people to help, advocates, a team to help them. So that all came one piece at a time. This is what happened. The survey was at the end of October, and the folks who started the canteen run through their church was doing a small group studying the book, Radical. You know, they were very encouraged by what I was trying to do, and we spent quite a bit of time praying for See You at Home and what the Lord would do. And leaving there, the host, whose home we were having the meeting, walked out to the car with me, and he said, you know, I think I could help one of these folks, like, get an ID and get to doctor's appointments. He said, I just retired, and I think I could help you with that. And I was on cloud nine. We had
helper?
Yes, the first real advocate for someone to go into a home. And then a couple weeks later, I got notified from a woman who had seen a notice in a church bulletin that we were looking for property to help people get off the street. And she said, hey, can we meet? So we met for dinner. I met her and her husband, and she said they have a little one-bedroom house across the street from their home. She said, you know, we really do not have the money to pay utilities in that empty house. If you can pay the utilities, let's help one of these guys get off the street. And this couple, as I got to know them, neither one of them had full-time jobs. They didn't have any health insurance. They often got food from food pantries, very humble. And that's how the Lord sought to provide for us. And 2 weeks later, right before Christmas, we were able to welcome Vern into the home. He's the first person on that list of most vulnerable, with John as his advocate. And, you know, we were off to the races.
God had called Melanie. She had stepped out in faith, and he was providing. But God wasn't just growing a ministry. He wanted to grow Melanie, too. And that required facing some hard parts of her personality. That's coming up in part two of Epic. Welcome back to Epic. Thanks for listening to the show. If you know a friend who would like to hear this episode, you can always find the podcast of this and other chapters of Epic at myfaithradio.com. Today, we're hearing Melanie Jackson's story. Here's part two.
She said, you know, we really do not have the money to pay utilities in that empty house. If you can pay the utilities, let's help one of these guys get off the street. And that's how the Lord sought to provide for us. And 2 weeks later, right before Christmas, we were able to welcome Vern into the home. And, you know, we were off to the races.
So the ministry grows pretty fast over a short amount of time. And as you've mentioned, this was pretty much in an area that you had no experience. You were learning as you were going. Were there growing pains along the way for you?
Absolutely. I really have always struggled with control is what it ultimately is, but with perfectionism, with expecting a lot out of other folks and being frustrated when they don't produce. And actually several times throughout the ministry, someone would get very close to me and helping and spending lots of time investing. The first person who helped really helped me the first year and a half. And one day, we were going to have our board meeting that night. One afternoon, he walked into the office and he handed me a great big folder with all of his CU at Home materials. And he said, I won't be coming back. And that was actually the end of our relationship. And we had known each other for about 20 years.
Did you have an indication why, what the problem was?
He didn't tell me, but I knew it was me demanding too much of him, too much of his time. He had grandkids, wanted to spend time with, and I just expected more and more from him.
What was that experience like for you?
It was devastating, truly devastating, knowing that I was the main reason he walked away. And God is so gracious. That same afternoon, there was another friend who had been helping with transportation for our ministry, and he walked in the office. This was about an hour after John had walked out, and he walked in and he said, you know, I want to get more involved with what you're doing. And Tony has had my back ever since. It was the very day, 1 hour later.
It seems like this common theme throughout the whole thing, and it's interesting because you've written a book about the experience now, which is called More Than Enough, but the common theme is about provision. But here's what I love about it. God didn't provide because you were perfect and you did everything well.
That's absolutely right. He does so much in spite of ourselves. He's a redeemer, and his grace is sufficient. Time and time again, when I screwed up, either in a relationship or a decision that I made, God came through in ways I could never have predicted or asked for or prayed for. He's so creative in the way he problem solves and provides.
So the need for the ministry as it grew was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You started out trusting by selling an SUV and a motorcycle, and that lasted for a time. But now you've moved into pretty deep waters. Let's leapfrog ahead. The ministry had how many houses now to transition people?
There are four houses now, and it's about $500,000 a year budget.
Oh, my goodness.
With five full-time employees.
And that's grown over how many years?
Over seven.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
For a long time, you never even took a salary. You continued to live in that sort of just God's going to provide.
Yes. The first 26 months of the ministry, I had no source of income. Some of you might have heard of George Mueller and how he prayed and God provided so miraculously time and time again. He didn't tell anyone of the need for himself or for ministries or for the orphans. And I'm certainly no George Mueller and I don't claim to be, but I followed his model by praying, by having my friends pray with me. And I didn't write a missionary letter and go to churches and say, you know, would you help me with my living expenses? And for 26 months, my bank account literally never went below $500. It only went below $1,000 twice. This is with no source of income. I had gas in the little car I had bought that entire time. I had a phone with service. I had health insurance that entire time, 26 months.
What were some ways that God showed up?
A young student at the university did a fashion show, and she was doing it for CU at Home. And when she brought me the envelope with cash, she said, we all talked about it and decided that we want you to use this for your gas and for your phone. I had a friend from church league softball that retired early, and he wanted to tithe to someone who was serving the Lord, and he brought me a check for $2,500.
Oh, my goodness. Were you just blown away time and time again?
Time and time again. There was money that went into my bank account that I still don't know where it came from.
So the ministry grows. It's doing amazing things, and it finally gets to a place where it's really running well, and then if you could share about how you began to sense a shift in your personal direction.
A few years earlier, I had taken a trip out to Colorado Springs, and I really felt God saying that that is where I was going to be. That's where I was going to live. And that was in 2005. And a couple different times over the years, I had shopped my resume around and thought that, okay, maybe this is the time. So 12 years later, our ministry hired a partner, a management level partner, to help me with the ministry. He came on board in September. So between September and February, that 6 months, the board chair and myself, we all kind of knew that he was the one. He's going to be the one to lead this ministry. So in February, I got to go out to Colorado and spend a week just seeking the Lord. I was definitely going with a green light in my heart. I wanted to be there very much. And I said, Lord, stop me if this is not right. Make it clear. So I went to church, and one of the pastors prayed with me after the service and kind of heard my story about See You at Home and about hoping to come out to Colorado. And he looked at me and he said, Melanie, you know, maybe the Lord wants you to rest. And I don't rest well. So I kind of put that in my pocket thinking, maybe yeah, maybe no. So the next day was Monday, and I went to a Chick-fil-A and had a sandwich, an extra sandwich to give away, and talked to these guys that were doing a Bible study across from my table. And when those guys left, one of them came over to me and he put out his hand and he said, you're going through some very big changes in your life right now. And there have been a lot of roadblocks, a lot of impediments through the years, and those are all being removed. And I said, thank you. I received that.
You knew exactly what that
meant.
I
knew what that meant. And you know, I joke. I said, I don't remember his name, but maybe his name was Clarence, and maybe I heard a bell ring. I don't know. So prophecy, right in the middle of a Chick-fil-A from a stranger. After that, I went straight to the zoo on the side of the mountain in Colorado Springs. And, you know, I'm thinking, rest. I'm still not sure what to do with that. And, okay, roadblocks are gone. Later this year, it's going to be time. And I went up in an old ski lift that they have that gives you a nice view of the city. And coming down the ski lift, I saw something, snapped a picture of it, and started crying. It was a very large sculpture of a feather. And through the years, since 2004, off and on, God has spoken to me pretty specifically through a feather. And this was like a 12-foot feather.
This was, you couldn't miss this.
Yeah. So by Monday afternoon, I had my answer. I knew. He didn't need to tell me anything else, and made plans to move later that year.
What I think is interesting is that you've gone from one season and one type of trusting God's provision to a whole different one. If you can describe what your life is like now.
Yes, being called to rest. And later that summer, the word that I got was, do not work, do not look for work.
Wow.
So very specific with the rest. I have identified myself with my work, with my occupation, you know, most of my adult life. And I knew that was going to be very tough for me. You know, he wanted me to really, truly rest. And I got moved out September 12th is when I landed in Colorado Springs last year. And I didn't have a place to live. So I moved out there with the packed up truck and no place to live. I had reserved a hotel for a week. It was Tuesday night. And Friday, someone had connected me with a family that had an elderly father who had a two-bedroom condo and needed some care, and I moved in on Saturday morning.
It's like one of like a thousand examples, and especially if you read the book, you'll see it as well, of finding that God will provide if you're willing. From your life experience, what have you learned about God's ability to provide for you?
I've learned that He is faithful. My life verse, 1 Thessalonians 5:24, the one who has called you is completely dependable. If he said it, he'll do it. And that has just played itself out in my life so many times over and over again through provision of a place to live, through provision of a job, through simple financial provision without employment. And I'm right there again, actually. It's been 10 months in Colorado, and I've been not working, and I've been not looking for work. When I moved out there, I had a few thousand dollars, and that's what I've been living on. I haven't been paying rent, but all of the other expenses of life. And just before I went on this book tour for More Than Enough, ordering the books themselves took my bank account to zero. And I don't have a savings account. I don't have parents, you know, with money. There isn't a plan B is what I'm trying to say. And I don't think it's coincidence. I think it's God incidence that he has me here with an empty bank account, going around with a brag book, talking about his miraculous provision. and oh, by the way, I have to move out of where I live. So when I get back to the Springs, I'll have 3 weeks for God to provide another place for me to land. And he hasn't given me ministry direction yet. I'm waiting for what that looks like.
It's hard to come away from a conversation with Melanie Jackson and not feel challenged to trust God more. She has learned to wait and to trust at a level that's unusual in our culture. And the story she shared today only scratches the surface of the ways God has miraculously provided. In fact, she filled an entire book with stories of his provision. It's called More Than Enough, and you can read more about Melanie and her book at morethanenoughthebook.com. Big thanks to the folks who help make Epic possible every week. Ted Ross and Jason Rackow with production. Thanks to Stefan Johnson for our show's theme music. And I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.